Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time, rounding up all of the latest J2 and J3 news every week. As usual, I'm John Steele, and my partner in crime this week is a regular, it's Stuart Smith. Stu, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Just to check, John, that this podcast is all about J2 and not J3, right?
That's right. Yeah, don't sorry to spring on you.
Well, in that case, I'm all good.
JTalk Short Corners coming up later with a special guest host this week, it should be said as well. So there's a tease for later on. But no, Stu, you're not asked to give opinions on Gifu this week. So don't worry.
Good.
Yeah, safety. This is a safe space for Gifu supporters and all J League fans, we hope. Stu, I know you've got your sort of first coronavirus jab coming up later this week. So try and get you in and out quickly, Sean Carroll style, so you've got plenty of time to rest ahead of that. So if you're okay, we'll jump straight in. Let's talk about the promotion race at the top of J2. Round 29 took place last weekend, and the top two teams in the table, Iwata and Kyoto, both came from behind to win their matches, didn't they? Iwata eventually picked up a 3-1 win on the road away at Jeff United. Iwata nearly went in front in the 15th minute when a cross from the left-hand side evaded everybody and bounced off the post, but it was actually Jeff who were in front at the break. They were awarded a penalty right at the end of the first half when Yuto Suzuki brought down Rui Sueyoshi inside the area, and it was Tomoyamiki who emphatically dispatched the spot kick for his 8th goal of a very impressive season. I think we've mentioned his name a few times on the pod this year. It wasn't until the 65th minute that Iwata equalised, and the goal came from a bad mistake from a veteran Jeff centre-back Daisuke Suzuki. He tried to cushion a header back to his goalkeeper, Shota Arai, but he sort of got it wrong, and the ball dropped perfectly for Daiki Ogawa to round the goalkeeper and make it 1-1. In the last 15 minutes, Jeff were fairly terrorised by Lukian. He narrowly missed a chance to put Iwata 2-1 up, and then he did score with just 6 minutes to go, converting a low cross from Ryo Takano inside the 6-yard box. And right at the end, Lukian added a third goal for Iwata, racing clear following a long, hopeful punt from the back, and sheer confidence really with his finish, firing past Arai. I think that puts him on 16 goals for the season. So he was the match winner really. It finished Jeff Chiba 1, Iwata 3. Plenty of drama at Sanga Stadium, Stu. I'll just round up this game before I come to you for some comments. 2 penalties and an injury time winner as Kyoto beat Ryukyu 2-1. Ryukyu started very brightly in this one. They went ahead in the 16th minute. Keigo Numata's deep cross was headed in by Takuma Abe at the far post, I think with the aid of a slight deflection off a defender as well. And Ryukyu had the chance to double their lead midway through the first half. They won a penalty when Kyoto's Takuya Ogiwara brought down Hidetoshi Takeda inside the box. Abe stepped up to take the penalty, but very uncharacteristically, he put the ball far too close to Tomoya Wakahara, the Kyoto keeper, and the penalty was saved. And yes, Ryukyu were left to kind of rue that miss later on. Kyoto got a penalty of their own about 5 minutes before half-time. Sota Kawasaki was upended by the Ryukyu centre-back Ryohei Okazaki. He was making his first start for the team since May on his way back from quite a lengthy injury layoff. Peter Uteka made no mistake from the spot, so it was 1-1 at half-time. I think that's 15 goals for the season for Uteka. Yeah, and he never looked like he was going to miss the penalty. Ryukyu's goalie, Junto Taguchi, made some good saves in the second half, as it looked like the game was going to end in a draw. But not for the first time, Kyoto had a super sub, Ismaila, to bring on, and he scored the winner in the 93rd minute when he headed in a kind of cross-come shot from Kosuke Shirai out on the right. Cue wild celebrations from the Kyoto players and fans. I think they all sensed that was quite a big goal and a big 3 points for them in their kind of quest to get promoted back to J1. So, what do you make of it, Stu? I suppose that the top two sides winning isn't kind of the most surprising headline. But yes, Jeff United 1, Iwata 3, and Kyoto 2, Ryukyu 1. What did you think?
Well, I think it's almost the close of the promotion race. They're now, Kyoto are now 10 points clear of Albirex Niigata in third place. And I think that, Kyoto I mean, when they signed Ismaila, I always had the vision of him being an impact substitute. And I'm not often right about things, but I think this has turned out to be right. I think that was his third goal coming off the bench in 6 appearances for Kyoto. So he's doing exactly what they brought him in to do, which is to alleviate some of the focal point pressure on Peter Utaka, who is having a stunning season, but it's good for Kyoto to have Ismaila there. Jubilo just look really, really strong. I think one of the things that I completely missed on this year is the fact that Jubilo have managed to mold their collection of good individuals into a good team. I mean, they're now 11 points clear of third place. They look pretty good, good odds for promotion. They've got a strong back line. They've got a creative midfield, but also a bit of steel in there as well. And whenever you've got like Lukian as your kind of pointed edge going forward, I think you're right, he does have 16 goals this year, and he's so difficult to defend. I mean, like, his first goal was a real striker's goal, just arriving at the right place at the right time. And then his second goal was a classic breakaway goal. Like, he used his speed, he used his style, and he just kind of placed it past the right. And 16 goals for the year, I mean, he looks the real deal. And I think that it's those two teams is kind of promotion to lose, I would guess, right now. I don't see that any of the other chasing teams 10 or 11 points better than them, to be quite frank. Yeah, I would say, unless barring something miraculous like another wild run by Montedio Yamagata or Machida Zelvia just grinding out wins in every single game, I think Kyoto and Jubilo look pretty good odds on for promotion.
I'll clip that out just in case we do need to play it back in a sort of, you know, bloopers with it. But no, joking aside, I tend to agree. I'm glad that you singled out Lukian, because I think he is not unique but unusual in the sense that he had a not that impressive season last year. And I think quite often with, you know, Brazilian forwards, when they come into the J League, they tend to either sort of be underwhelming from start to finish, or they start kind of very explosively and then slowly fade away a little bit. But what I noticed with him is he is bulked up so much from last season, you know, physically, and he is so much kind of stronger and fitter. Like, he scored these 16 goals, but I don't recall. I've never seen this guy looking like out of breath or even particularly sweaty during games. Like, I think his fitness level is just astonishing. And I think it's kind of, it's no accident, or it's not luck, that he is scoring way more goals and looks way more dangerous than last year. Because I think he's really put the work in, I think, during the off season.
He reminds me, and this is a compliment, so stay with me. He reminds me of a younger, fitter Jay Bothroyd, who had a good time at Jubilo. He reminds me of the strength that he has, and his positional awareness is, I think his positional awareness has become better this year, and that's why you see him in the good positions to get goals. But I think that his attributes are really difficult to nullify. Because if you nullify him, kind of, if you try and take him out physically, that's really difficult to do, because there's a variety of ways that he can get the better of defenders physically, whether it's in the air, whether it's his pace on the ground, whether it's his kind of brute strength to hold off defenders. And when he does get into his goal scoring positions, he's usually quite accurate. And so I think that Jay had a really good time at Jubilo back in the day before he went to Sapporo, and I think that Lukian is kind of well on the way to helping Jubilo to promotion as well. And so I think that having Lukian there, and having the, what do you call it, the assist line that goes really deep, because you've got Yuki Otsu, you've got Endo, you've got Omori, you've got Ryo Takano. There's a lot of good players who are happy providing chances for forwards at Jubo, and Lukian's the beneficiary this year.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think, yes, looking at the league table and looking at the results, you know, on a week-by-week basis, as we do, it's very hard to kind of make a case against Iwata or Kyoto at the moment, isn't it? I mean, as you mentioned, Iwata are top. They have 62 points. Kyoto second. They're 1 point behind on 61. But maybe we should move on, Stu, and talk about the... We're calling them the chasing pack, but we'd probably be in trouble on a kind of trades descriptions, you know, tip back in the UK, wouldn't we? Because the chasing pack is 10 points behind.
They're not really chasing.
What are they doing? I don't know. But we have a group of four teams that are all 10 points behind Kyoto. So on 51 points, we have the teams from third to sixth. And in order, that's Niigata, Machida, Kofu, and Ryukyu. So we'll just run through how they got on in round 29 at the weekend. Stu, Niigata are still third, despite another disappointing result. They lost 2-1 at home to Yamagata, who are currently seventh. Niigata had the perfect start in this game. They went in front in the 10th minute. A very nice kind of side-on volley from Kaito Taniguchi after Yoshiaki Takagi crossed for him. Yamagata pulled level about 10 minutes before the break, though. Hikaru Nakahara, impressive as usual down the right flank, just having an excellent time of things at the moment. He clipped in a low cross that Vinicius Araujo managed to divert into the net via the post. And now, this didn't look like a great goal on first viewing, but trust me, the more times you watch it, the better it gets. It's hard to work out how he actually managed to squeeze the ball in, Vinicius, but he did. And then, yes, Yamagata came on strong in the second half. Vinicius nearly put them ahead just on the hour mark. But moments later, they did go in front. Nakahara did brilliantly again, cutting in from the right as he does, and then sliding a through ball. I think he was looking for Vinicius, but he and Kota Yamada were kind of both somehow unmarked inside the Niigata penalty area. And it was Yamada who got there first and beat the Niigata goalie Koto Abe to make it 2-1. Niigata tried desperately to equalise. Akito Fukuta should have done better when he blazed over the bar from close range. And Yamagata's keeper Victor made a great save at the end to preserve the lead. Yes, so that game finished Niigata 1, Yamagata 2. It's Machida in fourth, Stu, after they picked up a third straight win. This time it was a 1-0 victory away at Yamaguchi. It was kind of a weekend of penalties and late goals, I suppose. And this game had both. The teams had a good chance each in the first half. Yamaguchi hit the post with a header from a corner, and then Machida won their penalty on the half-hour mark. Shusuke Ota, very impressive in recent weeks, was brought down by a Brazilian centre-back Henan. Ota took the penalty himself, but it was saved brilliantly by Daisuke Yoshimitsu in the Yamaguchi goal. It's well done to him. He was making his just his first start of the season, wasn't it, in goal for Yamaguchi. This game looked to be fizzling out into a draw, but the Machida sub, Dudu, popped up with an acrobatic late winner in the 84th minute when he volleyed in a looping cross from Yuki Okada. Dudu could even have added a second goal for Machida late on, but Yoshimitsu made a good save from him. So yeah, that game finished Yamaguchi 0, Machida 1. Kofu were pretty dominant in their game away at Gunma. Stu eventually winning 3-0. Kofu took the lead in just the 6th minute when Niki Urakami headed home a corner from Gakuto Notsuda. And Gunma nearly equalised in a goal-mouth scramble towards the end of the first half. Kofu were helped out by their defender Hidehiro Sugai, who cleared off the line. And Gunma were dealt a body blow straight after the restart, really, when Kofu went 2-0 up. I think this was in the 46th minute. William Lira setting up Sho Araki to fire into the roof of the net from close range. Araki then returned the favour in the 66th minute. He sent a low cross to the far post for William Lira to slide the ball in from just a couple of yards out. So yes, 3-0 after 66 minutes, the game pretty much up. Gunma were playing in red shirts in this match, Stu, which confused me initially. I don't think it did them much good in the end, but they almost grabbed a late consolation goal with a header. I think it was from Kazune Kubota, but I'm not sure, but it came back off the post, but that was their last chance And yeah, it's a disappointing afternoon or evening for them. So yeah, what to make of the so-called chasing pack? Stu, Niigata 1, Yamagata 2, Yamaguchi 0, Machida 1, and Gunma 0, Kofu 3. Anything to pick out from these matches?
Just the fact that I think Albirex have kind of wasted the foundation that they built earlier on in the season. They could have been so much more. And I think that game between Niigata and Yamagata kind of showed us what could have been. Because obviously Kaito Taniguchi scored, I think he's in double figures for the year now, which is a great return for someone who's playing in J3 last year. But whereas they've kind of wasted the platform that they built, you just wonder what Montedo Yamagata would have done if Klomowski would have been in charge or had have been in charge from the start. They look good. They look energetic. They look positive. But they look like they're not going to get into the top two. And so without any playoffs this year, again, just like you said before, the chasing pack, I mean, they're not really doing much chasing. And just the way that the games fall, they're going to be playing each other. And just the fact that there's so many, well, if we include Nagasaki, I know they drew 0-0 with Sagami Ho. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But if you include those six teams, they'll be taking points off each other. And I think they'll just allow Sanga and Jubilo just to do enough to stay in front. And so I think my regret is that Albirex couldn't build on their good first half of the season. Corfu, I mean, guess what position Corfu are in? Even when there are four teams all level on 51 points, Corfu are in fifth. I mean, it just is destiny. They are destined to be in fifth position forever. That's a fact. Machida, I don't know. Like Machida, they're good at times. They're efficient at times. They never blow me away. I never think, oh wow, what a team Machida are. But I mean, fourth position. I mean, Ranko Popovich has done a really good job. I wonder what the specifications are for him, kind of at Machida. I wonder if they expected promotion this year, or I wonder if they see it as a long-term project. But it's all kind of, I think it's all kind of moot right now, because I think that Kyoto and Jubilo are just too far ahead of the chasing pack right now. That's not to say that they're not good teams, that they are. They objectively are good teams, but I don't see any of them going into the top two.
Yeah, you're right. We seem to lament the lack of playoffs every week. So I echo your thoughts. I agree with you, but I think it would be a really good set of games, wouldn't it, if we got Niigata against Ryukyu and Machida against Kofu, and then a final. But I agree. I think on Niigata, just before we move on, I noticed the coach, Alberto Puig. He's gone from sort of very, very expensive looking knitwear sort of in the kind of early months of the season. And he's down to wearing stuff from the club shop now.
Sure.
In the technical area, which I don't want to read too much into sort of touchline sartorial choices. But Jose Mourinho, he always tends to wear like club shop stuff when he's peed off, doesn't he?
Sure.
And I just wonder if I think you said they've wasted the kind of momentum that they had at the start of the season, which I think is right. I just wonder if a change might be coming there in the winter, because I actually think he's a really good manager and a very nice guy. But I don't know. This is kind of his second go at it, isn't it? And it went really well for sort of 3 months and then has gone wrong. So I wonder if he might turn up somewhere else in the J League next season. And on Machida, I think it might be interesting to see what happens in the winter in terms of how much money is available for Ranko Popovich to maybe strengthen the team. Because I think especially some exciting players, young players in the midfield who will have attracted attention from bigger teams, can they pay more money to keep them, or are they ready to kind of splash money to replace those players if they leave. And I think it's an interesting kind of tension between the owners or the majority shareholder cyber agent we know is a big company with lots of money versus the fact that the J League as a whole is really struggling right now with the, you know, the attendance caps and sort of COVID recovery. I wonder, I'm kind of already, this is typical J League addiction, isn't it? I'm already wondering what match of the squad's going to look like next season with 14 games left this year. Maybe we should save that for another time. But Stu, I think I would like to be a contrarian and turn this into a sort of 1 hour debate, but I think when the top two are 10 points clear, I think it's difficult for us to sort of make a case that there's going to be a very exciting title race. But I think the gauntlet's laid down for, you know, those teams that are on 51 points, 10 points behind. There's four of them. Maybe one of them can make a challenge, but they need to get it together quickly, don't they? So we'll check in with them again next week and we'll see how they're doing. But I think for now, we've promoted two teams and disappointed four. So let's take a quick comfort break and then we can talk about a kind of part of the table that's a lot harder to call, Stu, the relegation dogfight. So yeah, let's take a quick break and then we'll talk about the bottom of the table when we come back. Welcome back, everyone. Stu and I have had a quick comfort break after talking about the sort of non-existent promotion race at the top of J2. Stu, for a little bit more excitement, let's turn our attentions to the relegation dogfight now. This is where things get complicated, isn't it? Just 4 points are separating the bottom side, Sagamihara and Yamaguchi, in 15th place. So we'll talk about these teams more or less in order from the bottom up. Sagamihara picked up a very handy point away at Nagasaki at the weekend. This game finished 0-0. Not too much to report on in terms of on-field action, but Sagamihara's keeper Akihiko Takeshige made two very good saves late on. The second one in particular, when he tipped an effort from Ryohei Yamazaki against the crossbar, was an absolutely excellent save. For Sagamihara, just one defeat in their last six. I think the coach Takuya Takagi is going to be very pleased with that, and also with this kind of clean sheet and away point against one of his many former clubs. Now, Matsumoto, Stu, have slumped to second bottom. This is after losing 2-0 away at Tokyo Verdy in a game that was a first win for Verdy's caretaker boss, Takafumi Hori. You sensed it might be a long afternoon in store for Matsumoto when Ryoya Yamashita hit the post for Verdy in just the 12th minute. And the opening goal arrived on the half hour when Junki Koike finished off a superb kind of tiki-taka passing move to score his 13th goal of the season. Verdy were more or less in control of this match, but they didn't add a second goal until 8 minutes from full time when Boniface Nduka powerfully headed home completely unmarked from a Ryota Kajikawa corner. I have to say, Stu, the last 20 minutes of this match, Matsumoto were run absolutely ragged by Tokyo Verdy. Verdy's football was kind of from another dimension or another planet, really. And for Matsumoto, it's four defeats and a draw from their last five matches. They look absolutely terrible at the moment. So we're in this weird situation where I now think Sagamihara got more chance of staying up than Matsumoto. But what did you think of these two games? Nagasaki 0, Sagamihara 0, Tokyo Verdy 2, Matsumoto 0.
Well, I don't think it's difficult to argue that Sagamihara look a better team than Matsumoto Yamaga right now. I think that obviously it's a very easy thing to say, but Sagamihara just need to score more goals. I mean, it's all very well keeping clean sheets or just conceding once in a game, but if you're not scoring, then you're not going to get out of the bottom four, I think. But I think they look a lot more able to get out of the relegation battle now than they did before Takagi was appointed. And I think that's how it's the same way you can judge Omiya as well. I think we'll come on to them in a minute. And Ehime, to a certain extent. Like, with their managers that they have now, they look more likely to get out of relegation mess, whereas Matsumoto look less likely. Nanami hasn't done anything except make that team... I don't know if he made it worse, but he certainly hasn't made it any better. If I was if I was a gambling person, I would have put all my money on Verdy beating Matsumoto, because just the way those teams set up, Verdy with their wide front three, Yamashita and Koike on the wings, and Matsumoto's seemingly inability to play the wing-back system, even though that's how they set up with three centre-backs. They time and time and time again, they were getting done behind the wing-backs, and Yamashita and Koike were having a field day. And then on top of that, they decide not to mark Nduka Boniface for the header, and it was just, it was really bad all round. And Matsumoto Yamaga look like a bad team. They look like a rudderless team. I think there's more danger of Nanami being sacked than him being able to lead Matsumoto out. The only benefit that he has is that it's so bunched up, and I assume we'll talk about the other games coming soon, but Matsumoto look a shell of a club right now.
Yeah, I think for me, one thing that sprung to my mind the last couple of performances from Matsumoto is they are kind of like, their system seems to be based on Okayama's system, by which I mean they have sort of 10 players that don't really create anything, and then they're, you know, Okayama relying on Satoki Oeijo to do everything, and Matsumoto have brought back Serginho, and he's playing the Oeijo role of like taking pot shots from 35 yards now and again. And against a team like Tokyo Verdy, who are, I think they're 9th or 10th, they are very much a mid-table J2 side, but they were given the time and the space to just, you know, impersonate, you know, Brazil 1982, really, weren't they, in this match? And it was, I think I said to you before we started recording, if this game had had an extra 30 minutes added on for an injury or a stoppage, I think that Verdy could have gone for 4, 5, 6. Matsumoto had given up the ghost completely. I think for Sagamihara, they've just added, I don't know exactly where this has come from, but up front they've just got a bit of swagger at the moment, you know, a little bit of swashbuckle, which not words that I thought I'd be using to describe them after the kind of first half of the season. So I think we've got to give Takiya Takagi a lot of credit, because he's whipped them into a situation where, you know, they have a puncher's chance of getting out of the relegation zone, don't they? It'd be an absolutely incredible achievement for the squad, especially considering how they started the season. Listen, Stu, if I mention swagger and swashbuckle, that means we have to move on to talk about a pretty astonishing Orange Derby at Ninjinia Stadium. This game eventually finished 3-3 between Ehime and Omiya. So just to keep us on the straight and narrow, Ehime are third bottom now, and Omiya are just outside the drop zone, are in 18th place on goal difference only. In this game, there was a perfect start for Omiya as they went in front in just the 6th minute. Very neat approach play saw Kazuaki Mawatari sending a perfect cross for Kanji Okunuki to head home. But the game, it's typical Omiya, isn't it? The game was turned around by half-time. In the 38th minute, Yoshiki Fujimoto powered in a superb header from Daiki Kogure's right-wing cross. That's 9 goals for the season for Fujimoto. He really has been brilliant for Ehime. 3 minutes later, the home side was suddenly 2-1 up. A corner kick from Takumu Kawamura seemed to go in without a touch from any player on either team, but the goal was eventually given to the Ehime defender Taishi Nishioka. I think he must have just got the faintest of touches on it on the way through. So Ehime 2-1 up at half time. Omiya drew level just before the hour thanks to an own goal. The unfortunate Kogure was the last man. He played Kanji Okunuki onside, I think. And then when Okunuki crossed for Shunsuke Kikuchi got his feet in a muddle when he tried to shoot, and the ball ran loose and then went in off Kogure before he could react for an own goal. So 2-2 after about an hour. 4 minutes after that, Ehime retook the lead though on a lightning counter-attack. Fujimoto brilliantly laid on a chance for Kaisei Ishii, who drilled in his first goal of the season in some style. And 4 minutes after that, Omiya equalised for the second time. This time it was Atsushi Kawata heading in a corner for his third goal in consecutive games. This game finished 3-3. Stu, I think I could cut you a highlights reel that made these two look like mid-table teams, and I think I could cut you a different highlight reel that made them look like they were the bottom two. So please make sense of this game for us.
It's kind of difficult to make sense of this game, but it's... it's a result of having two managers that are kind of possession and attack oriented, and having and not having that much of an idea of what to do at the back. And I think, yeah, you saw that some of the attacking output was spectacular, but that has to be tempered along with the fact that Okamoto once again had a terrible game for Rehime in goal. But I think this is the thing. I think these teams, I think Omiya a little bit more than Ehime, but both these teams have goals in them. And I think it's the opposite of Sagamihara, really. Like, neither of the Ehime and Omiya don't really have that many clean sheets in them, if I'm being honest. So it's where the balance lies. And I think that both of them showed what they can do, particularly Ehime, when they get the ball out wide. They have some interesting movement in the box, and they can find players going free in the area. There's some good movement there. I think Omiya, I still feel Omiya will get out of it, because I think I'm trying to justify it. It's quite difficult, actually, but I think that they have just enough to get out of it. But again, I'd feel slightly more comfortable if they were converting some of these draws into wins, which I think it doesn't take a lot for them to be able to do that. But I think they've got to start doing it sooner rather than later. But yeah, both these teams have got a decent chance of getting out of this this relegation zone. And I'll just go back to my other answer, in that they changed managers, and the manager change gave them a fighting chance of getting out of it. So I think kudos to them for doing it. I don't think they had a choice, but they went through on doing it. And yeah, they look like they might be able to reap the rewards later on this year.
Yeah, this match was fantastic entertainment. I don't think I learned anything sort of conclusive about either team by the end, but I think your analysis is spot on that tight defence is not the order of the day for either manager, is it? It's all about scoring goals when they attack. And Ehime, they when they counter attack, they look really good. It's just sort of everything else that's been problematic. And I think Omiya, we've at every single conversation I have on the pod this season has been very similar. Like, there's so much quality, relatively to the rest of J2, that they should be in no trouble at all. And I think you're just getting the signs that they finally seem to have just woken up to that. And I think they probably will now be okay. But then again, they can let in, this game could have slipped away from them. They were 1-0 up and cruising, and then suddenly 2-1 down at the break. And that is a very dangerous, against better teams, that would be fatal, I think, to let the game slip away like that. So we'll see. We'll see. Plenty of games to go. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you to nominate a bottom four, Stu, because we'd be here all night. Nobody wants that. People will be going away and doing other things, won't they? So let's talk about another relegation dogfight match that might be pivotal in the final reckoning. Stu, Zweig and Kanazawa, they're now inside the relegation zone. They're level on points with Omiya, but with an inferior goal difference. Kanazawa lost 1-0 away at a very much improved Kita Kyushu the weekend. Now, Takemitsu Tomiyama had the ball in the net for Kita Kyushu in the first half, but he was miles offside and the goal was correctly ruled out. The all-important goal that did stand came about 7 minutes into the second half, and it was an absolute scorcher from Daigo Takahashi, wasn't it? He seized on a loose ball on the edge of the box and sent an unstoppable left-footed curler past Masaki Goto in the Kanazawa goal. Goto then made a good save at point-blank range to keep Kanazawa in it later on, but to no avail, and it finished 1-0 to Kita Kyushu. Kita Kyushu now 5 games unbeaten, and a very impressive 3 straight clean sheets as well. Kanazawa, they're in real trouble. I know there's been a kind of vote of confidence or a statement of apology posted on the club website today, which is never a good sign in the J-League. So, Stu, again, I kind of can't believe I'm saying this, but Kita Kyushu look like they might well get out of it, and it's Kanazawa who are going to be very nervous for the next few matches, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think Kanazawa, what are they, 10 without a win now? It sounds right, even if it feels right, because they've plummeted, and they looked from the highlights that I saw, they looked like a team devoid of confidence. I'm surprised they haven't replaced their manager, to be quite honest about things. I suppose there is a lost art of loyalty, I suppose, and giving Yanagishita, again, I hate saying that name, Yanagishita, the chance to rectify things is probably a noble thing. But as we've seen with kind of some of the other relegation candidates, a change might have been the best thing. But also, arguing against myself, Kita Kyushu could have done the same thing, but I think they have slightly more capital invested in Shinji Kobayashi. I think he has more moral money in the bank with Kita Kyushu having led them to promotion. And this was a vital win for Kita Kyushu. A great goal from Takahashi. I think one of the things, if we're being ultra critical, is that some of the players that did it well last year for Kita Kyushu haven't done it as well this year. Now, of course, you can make the argument that the support staff or the supporting players are different, but I think Takahashi is one of the players that has that kind of ability in him, but I haven't seen it enough this year. But I mean, if he's going to take goals like that every other game or every three games, I think Kita Kyushu will take that, because it set them on the road to a big win. And Kanazawa look bereft of ideas. Bereft of ideas. They look bereft of confidence. Because once Kita Kyushu went in front, there was no way Kanazawa were coming back in that game. And that's a really, really bad place to be. And I think Kanazawa have got their game in hand in midweek. Are they playing Nagasaki in midweek?
They're playing a Yamaguchi. Yeah, we'll talk about Yamaguchi. That. Talk about that in a minute. But yeah.
Playing Yamaguchi. Well, they need something. They need something to, whether it's, it doesn't have to be a win. And I think if it's an injury time equalizer or kind of holding out for 30 minutes with 10 men or whatever, they need something to center themselves and kind of get that spirit level within them, and just to say, right, we can do this. We do have some good players and we have belief in the system. We can do this. They don't need to win, but they need to show something that shows that they have the fortitude in them and that they're ready to fight for this.
Yeah, James Taylor wasn't overly optimistic, I have to say, Stu, on the pod last week. He was pretty despondent.
I mean, yeah, I mean, but you would be, right? I mean, that's the thing. I think, like, trust me, I've been there. And it's not nice when you see your team just, like, fall like a stone. And the same mistakes get repeated, and you wonder where the next point is coming from. You wonder where the next kind of stroke of luck is coming from. And that's why I said this game against Yamaguchi is critical, because if they lose, then it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy. If they get something, or if they achieve something in that game, I think then you might see a little bit of a turnaround, because I think they've got another, who have they got? I think, so they've got Yamaguchi in midweek.
And they're hosting Matsumoto.
There you go. Right. So they've got a huge kind of 4 or 5 days coming up. So, but this Yamaguchi game is massive for them. They need something to hang their hat on from it.
Yeah, I think we have to say well done to Kita Kyushu. I don't think it was pretty, and I don't think it will be pretty from now until the end of the season, but I think... I can't remember exactly when, but I had them as kind of dead and buried. They made a pretty bad start, didn't they? And I think you're right, players like Daigo, Takahashi haven't done it as consistently or as eye-catchingly this year as last. So I think that they're on a good run that seems like it might just carry them through. But yeah, for Kanazawa, there's lots of work still to do. So yeah, just as a recap, because it is quite a mess down at the bottom, isn't it, Stu? The relegation zone at the moment from bottom to top has it Sagamihara bottom on 25 points, then it's Matsumoto on 26, Ehime third bottom also on 26 points, Kanazawa with a game in hand, as mentioned, are on 27 points, and they're level with Omiya, who are outside the relegation zone on goal difference. They're on 27 points as well. So I'll just mention the last couple of games from the round 29 action of the weekend. Stu, just above Omiya are Kita Kyushu in 17th. They're on 28 points. And then Gunma on 29, and Yamaguchi also on 29. Now, Tochigi are 3 points better off in 14th place, and they took another huge step towards survival by winning 1-0 away at Fajiono Okayama, a third straight win for Tochigi. Not a great deal of quality to report on from this game, Stu. I think this is what I would call it. It was a big boy football, wasn't it, for most of the game. The vital goal was a header, of course, but it came from Tochigi's captain, Yasutaka Yanagi, in the 73rd minute. He's scoring for the second game in a row, with Toshiki Mori supplying the deep cross for Yanagi. Okayama's best effort was from Satoki Oejo, who else really, but that was palmed away by Powell Obina Obi in the Tochigi goal. So it finished Okayama 0, Tochigi 1. Tochigi 5 points clear of the relegation zone on 32 points, and then yes, Okayama 3 points better off than that on 35. And Blaublitz Akita, they're in 11th. They're 10 points clear of the drop zone now after a pretty unexpected 3-0 win away at Mito Hollyhock. Just 80 seconds on the clock when Akita went in front. Ibuki Yoshida sliding in to connect with Taira Shige's low ball across the 6-yard box. And it was 2-0 about 10 minutes before the break. Hayate Take, mentioned on the pod last week, with a bullet of a header at the near post from Tomofumi Fujiyama's excellent right wing cross. And Akita sealed a fairly comfortable victory then with a penalty in the 64th minute. I might have this wrong, but I think the commentator said it's their first ever penalty in J2. So the first ever spot kick at J2 level. That's what I heard. Mito striker Mizuki Ando was adjudged to have pushed over his Akita counterpart Ryota Nakamura while they were waiting for a free kick to be delivered into the Mito box. And Nakamura stepped up to convert the penalty himself. So it finished Mito 0, Akita 3. Two straight wins with two consecutive clean sheets for Akita. Just one defeat in their last five. Like Tochigi, they're just in just enough form at just the right time to take themselves away from the relegation zone. So I think I would declare them safe at this point for me, Stu. Yeah, should we take another quick break if you're okay, Stu? When we come back, we can look ahead to the you mentioned there's a couple of rearranged games coming up in midweek, and we can talk about the round 30 games coming up at the weekend as well. Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Stu is still with me here, so we're just going to look ahead to the J2 action that's coming up this week and this weekend. So, Stu, we mentioned already there's a kind of sort of midweek J2 action coming up. Two games on Tuesday night this week, September the 14th. So these are the last two dirty stopouts from round 25, the kind of typhoon-affected round from a month or so ago. So we have Nagasaki taking on Yamagata on Tuesday night, and as mentioned, this kind of 6-pointer plus alpha, Yamaguchi against Kanazawa. By the time this pod is posted, I think these games will have happened already. So the plan is I'm going to post probably after we talk about the weekend games, just a little roundup, so the listeners will get to hear about what happened in these games as well. But yeah, some midweek J2 action to look forward to this week. But of course, yeah, there's a full round of fixtures coming up at the weekend in round 30. Most of the games taking place on Saturday, Stu, the 18th of September. I think there are, just counting live, seven fixtures on Saturday. So let's take a look. We've got Tochigi hosting Mito, Jeff Chiba hosting Ehime, that's at Ehime in 20th place, Kofu host Omiya, Omiya in 18th at the moment, as we mentioned. Yamagata against second place Kyoto is on the Saturday slate. We also have Machida against Nagasaki. Top of the table, Iwata host Okayama. And Ryukyu, now in 6th, are hosting 16th place Gunma. Four matches on Sunday to round off the round 30 slate. The 19th of September, we have Akita hosting 17th place Kita Kyushu. Tokyo Verdy hosting Niigata. bottom side, but a much improved Sagamihara are hosting 15th place Yamaguchi. You wouldn't bet against Sagamihara getting something from that game, based on how they're playing at the moment. And the big one, which I've gone mad, I've even put it in bold font in my notes. Stu, Kanazawa hosting Matsumoto, 19th place against 21st, and really has the feel of a kind of relegation 6-pointer shootout, doesn't it? Which of the games do you like the look of on the round 30 slate, Stu, at the weekend?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure I like the look of Kanazawa versus Matsumoto, but I think without question it's the biggest game on the slate. I think Montana Yamagata versus Kyoto will be one for the purists. I think that'll be a good game. Again, the ramifications of a Montana Yamagata win and probably not as big now as it would have been like a month ago. But also at the bottom, like you mentioned, Sagamihara versus Yamaguchi. I'm interested to see if Akita can continue their recent good run, because I think Kitakyushu will go there slightly more confident now than they would have done a couple of weeks ago. But it's a difficult place to go, Akita. And I noticed that they're kicking off at 3:00. We must be out of the heady heights of summer now if we're getting afternoon kickoffs. But I think definitely all roads lead to the bottom of J2. I think there's some big games this weekend there.
Yeah, I think for me, Akita, I think it's 2 clean sheets in a row, and Kitakyushu 3 clean sheets in a row. So, a fool might predict a 0-0 draw in that game. I know better. I've been watching J2 for years, so I'm sure it'll be 4-3 or 3-4 yes. or something ludicrous. Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think the exciting game, probably for a lot of the wrong reasons, will be Kanazawa against Matsumoto. And the game where players will have some kind of game plan that's visible to the viewer, that's probably the Yamagata-Kyoto game, isn't it? Especially in an attacking sense. The only game I'll pick out, just because it's funny, is Jeff Chiba hosting Ehime. Do you think there's any instances in the past of maybe Jeff messing up a home game against a lowly opponent, Stu, that we could draw on? Yeah, I don't think you even need to answer that, but you can see where I'm going with that one, can't you?
Yes.
A very good counter-attacking team that's quite low in the table. I feel like I'm in a kind of Groundhog Day scenario. Okay, we'll see how these games go. As usual, it's 11 fixtures, so there's something to look forward to in each one. Is there anything we haven't talked about that we should, Stu, or have we sort of covered everything, do you think?
I think aside from the fact that there was a wedding at Mito Hoihoku versus Akita, congratulations, yes, absolutely. But aside from that, no, I think we covered everything.
Well, I think Mito could perhaps do with a new centre-back pairing, couldn't they? So perhaps they could bring their boots with them next week. They might get a happy couple, might get a run out in central defence, yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to ask you for a comment on J3 and Gifu, Stu, because I think your application for the manager's job is probably in the post, isn't it? And we don't want to prejudice anything. So, Stu, listen. Joking aside, thanks again for coming on. It's always good to talk, and hear what you make of the latest goings on in J2. So hopefully we can get together again soon and see how right or wrong we were about what we said in this show.
Probably wrong. But then you've always got to, you've always got to kind of show your workings, but you've also got to accept when you get different information, you have to adjust your calibrations. And so, I don't mind doing that at all. Yeah.
I think it endears us to the listeners. You know, nobody likes a smart ass who's right all the time, do they? So,
well, they're not getting that on this podcast. So, yeah. They must be loving it, yeah.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, mind how you go, Stu. We'll talk again soon, I'm sure. Thanks, as always, for listening and downloading the pod. And if you support us or the J-Talk pod in general on Patreon, we appreciate that too, of course. Stay tuned, though. In a moment, you will hear me Hopefully rounding up the two midweek fixtures from Tuesday night, and then please stay tuned even after that for the J Talk Short Corner, all of the latest J3 news and action rounded up with a very special guest host this week. But that's all from me and Stu for now, and we'll speak soon. Take care. J Talk Extra Time. Hello again, everyone. John Steele here again. As promised, this is a quick wrap-up of the two rearranged J2 games that took place on Tuesday night during the midweek from round 25. Now, just the 11 goals across the two matches, proving once and for all that the J-League doesn't give a toss about how busy podcast hosts may or may not be during the week. But anyway, to the action on the pitch. And Zweigen Kanazawa's woes continue. They are now winless in 12 games after losing 4-1 away at Yamaguchi on Tuesday night. Kanazawa were behind on 10 minutes. Yamaguchi won the ball back on the edge of the Kanazawa D, and their captain Georgi Ikegami sent a low shot past Yuto Shirai, who was making a rare start in the Kanazawa goal. The struggling visitors did their best to get back into the game before half-time. Hayato Otani hit the post with a volley from Shion Niwa's knockdown, and then Niwa himself should have done better with a header from close range, but it was 1-0 to Yamaguchi at half-time. Things started to go really wrong for Kanazawa in the second period. Daisuke Takagi went close to making it 2-0 with a headed chance early on, but it was 2-0 soon enough, because in the 56th minute, Kazuma Takai, finally starting a game for Yamaguchi after spending the last three games on the bench, he volleyed home from close range when a corner kick was flicked on at the near post. A third Yamaguchi goal came in the 68th minute. Kanazawa just couldn't clear their lines, and when the ball came back into the box, Kota Kawano tucked away his chance very confidently. It was 4-0 in some style, 6 minutes from full time, when Hiroto Ishikawa lashed in a low free kick from fully 40 yards that somehow crept inside Shirai's right hand post. Kanazawa did get a goal back pretty much straight from the kickoff from that fourth goal that they conceded. Two substitute forwards, Ryuhei Oishi and Yuji Senema, combined with a 1-2 combination, and Oishi coolly beat Daisuke Yoshimitsu in the Yamaguchi goal. So the final score, Yamaguchi 4, Kanazawa 1. Kanazawa stay inside the relegation zone on 29 points. They're in 19th place and on a run of three straight defeats. That home game they have coming up on Sunday against Matsumoto looks, if possible, even bigger than it did before. Whereas for Yamaguchi, they're 5 points clear of the drop zone now in 15th place. Not safe yet, of course, but things are certainly looking quite good. Not to be outdone, there were 6 goals in the other Tuesday night J2 match. Nagasaki produced a scintillating display to thrash their visitors, Montedio Yamagata, 5-1, with a young striker, Asahi Uenaka, scoring a hat-trick, his first J-League goals for Nagasaki. Nagasaki were in front in the 18th minute here when Edgar Junior scored his 10th goal of the season. His initial shot hit the base of the Yamagata post, but the ball came straight back to him and he was able to slot it into the net before the Yamagata goalkeeper Victor could react. And it was 3-0 before half-time with the youngster Uenaka scoring twice. First of all, in the 35th minute, he was played in by Seiya Maikuma and rifled an unstoppable shot past Victor. And then on the stroke of half-time, Uenaka was found by Ryohei Yamazaki on the penalty spot, and he fired straight through Victor, really, to make it 3-0. And Uenaka completed a unforgettable 16-minute hat-trick when he scored again 6 minutes into the second half. Kaio Cesar skipped past Shuto Minami on the byline and then cut the ball back for Uenaka to score in a very similar manner to his second goal. It was 4-0 and to all intents and purposes game over at that point. Yamagata were given some brief hope in the 63rd minute when Hiroki Noda headed in a deep cross to pull a goal back. But it was Nagasaki's night and they restored their 4-goal cushion just 2 minutes after Noda's goal when Keiji Tamada curled in a fine strike from just inside the penalty area. I think it was Masashi Kamikawa who played Tamada in for that goal. So yeah, it finished Nagasaki 5, Yamagata 1, but Nagasaki remained 10 points adrift of the promotion places, and Yamagata 12 points adrift. So I still think, like Stu and I talked about, it seems like the gap is too big for either side to bridge this season. But yeah, a pretty impressive match, and a pretty impressive pair of Tuesday night matches all the same. Okay, thanks for sticking with the pod for some bonus midweek action. And yeah, after another short musical break, yeah, please stay tuned. J-Talk Short Corner is coming up to bring you up to speed with all the latest goings-on in J3. So that's all from me for now, and speak to you soon. J-Talk Extra Time. Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you in touch with all the latest events in the third division of the J-League. Regular host Mike Innes is taking a well-earned break this week, so yeah, it's me again, John Steele. So yes, hopefully it won't be too much of a Mike Innes tribute act, and I can put my own spin on things just for 1 week. Before we talk about the latest J3 action on the pitch, some quick news items, mainly injury news, I'm afraid, this week. Young Gifu midfielder Ayumu Matsumoto is going to be out injured for around 8 months, the club announced this week. Also over at Imabari, their veteran midfielder Hideo Hashimoto's also picked up an injury that's going to keep him out for around 3 months. So probably we've seen the last of him at Imabari for this season. One more injury update, and it comes at Miyazaki, where their defender Masafumi Miyagi is going to be out for around 6 to 8 weeks. So plenty of injury news to start things off, which might be a bit of a downer. Just one other news item before we talk about the latest J3 games and results. Down in Sanuki, the club made an official apology this week because four of their players played in their home game against Hachinohe, which we'll talk about later, with one of their main sponsors' logos missing from the home kit. So still not quite sure what happened there, but yeah, the club have apologised, not for what happened on the pitch, which again is coming up later in the pod, but yeah, because they were missing one of their sponsor logos that should have been on the kit for four of their starting players. With the latest J3 news taken care of then, we'll talk about what happened on the pitch last weekend in round 18. After this round, the top two with 32 points each are Toyama and Fukushima. Toyama cruised to a 3-0 home win over a pretty weak-looking Nagano on Saturday last week. This was made all the more impressive by the fact that their key midfielder Sho Hanai started this game on the bench. Toyama took the lead in the 10th minute when Tsubasa Yoshihira's low cross was swept in by their midfield anchor Yuya Himeno from around the penalty spot, and the same pair combined again to double the home side's lead in the 39th minute. Nagano lost possession down their left through Yuki Morikawa, and when Toyama countered, yes, Yoshihira teed up Himeno for a shot that the Nagano goalie Kengo Tanaka might have been a bit disappointed to let in. The game was up really on the stroke of half time when Toyama added a third goal. Another quick attack saw Matias Liria feed Nobuyuki Shina, and he squared the ball to Yoshihira for a simple finish. An excellent first half for Yoshihira, one goal and two assists, and the whole Toyama side really. In the second half, Tanaka in the Nagano goal had to make some good saves, but it finished Toyama 3, Nagano 0. A result that leaves Nagano in 8th place and fully 8 points adrift of the promotion places. Yes, Fukushima in 2nd also won in round 18. They beat Numazu 2-1 at home, really thanks to an own goal that came midway through the second half. Both sides had their chances in the first period here, with Ryo Watanabe back from suspension for Numazu looking especially lively. And it seemed like the first half was going to end 0-0. But Fukushima opened the scoring in stoppage time. A deep corner kick from Tokach was kept alive by Hayato Fukushima and then nodded down by Nobuki Ikitaka for the unmarked Hiroki Higuchi to score the 6th goal of a very productive season for him from inside the 6-yard box. Into the second half, and Numazu did equalise in the 63rd minute. A quickly taken free kick from deep inside the Numazu half caught the Fukushima defence napping. You can't do that against players like Ryo Watanabe, and he smashed an over-the-shoulder half volley past Kaito Yamamoto to make it 1-1. Just 5 minutes later, though, Fukushima got their winner. A through ball from Fukushima, the player for Fukushima, that is, freed Hiroto Yukie on the right side of the penalty area, and when he crossed low into the box, hapless Numazu defender Koki Inoue diverted the ball over the line for an own goal, and that's how it stayed. Fukushima 2, Numazu 1 was the final score, although Yamamoto in the Fukushima goal was called upon to make a smart reaction save from a Numazu header in the closing stages. So yeah, well done to Fukushima. They're now on a run of 4 straight wins and looking pretty good, it has to be said. Iwate are just a point further back in third place, and they triumph 2-1 away at Kagoshima in a very exciting end-to-end match. Just 10 minutes gone in this game when Iwate hit the front. A superb counter-attacking move ended with Toi Kagami setting up rookie midfielder Shunji Masuda for his first J-League goal. There were chances for both sides as the first half progressed. Han Yong-tae and Taisuke Nakamura for Iwate, and Gustavo late on in the half for the home side. Midway through the second period, the visitors got their crucial second goal on another well-executed breakaway. Half-time substitute Masashi Wada sent a through ball for another substitute, Megumu Nishida, to chase, and his shot from the left-hand side of the penalty area crept through Shogo Onishi in the Kagoshima goal to make it 2-0. Kagoshima then threw everything they had at Iwate, really. Yushi Yamaya was unlucky when his left-footed shot hit the crossbar and bounced down on the goal line, but didn't go over it. But then with 8 minutes left, Kagoshima were handed a lifeline. Iwate goalkeeper Taishi Brandon Nozawa spooned his goal kick straight to Hiroki Akiyama, who returned it with interest. His instant shot sailed over Nozawa's head and into the net via the crossbar. So a great strike from Akiyama that made it Kagoshima 1, Iwate 2. Kagoshima's last chance was pulled wide of the far post, though, by Rei Yonezawa right at the end, so it finished 2-1 to Iwate. A third straight win for the visitors, and it leaves Kagoshima 10 points off the promotion places, albeit they've played a game fewer than most of the other teams around them. Just with the league table in mind, it was Kumamoto, the team that had a bye in this round, but they're another point further back in fourth. Moving down the table, fifth-placed Gifu must have wished they'd had a bye at the weekend because they were beaten 3-0 at home by lowly Gainare Tottori. This was Gifu's third defeat in 4 games, and remember, their last home game was a 4-0 loss to Fukushima. After a goalless first half, the visitors went in front 10 minutes into the second period with a very nice passing move. Yu Okubo played in the former Gifu man Daichi Ishikawa, and he showed no mercy to his old side, sweeping the ball under goalkeeper Kazushige Kirihata. 7 minutes later, it was 2-0. Ishikawa was the provider this time, as his crossfield pass found Hayate Sugi in space just outside Gifu's penalty area, and he produced a lovely chipped finish to make it 2-0. A third goal killed Gifu off about 10 minutes from full time, and it was another former Gifu man, Yushi Nagashima, who had time inside the penalty area to twist past one defender and then score from close range. A very weird match for me personally because it was sunny at Nagaragawa, not the usual rain. Gifu were playing in their black summer uniform, summer kit, and yeah, they also suffered quite a chastening defeat in a game they were expecting to win. So yeah, this game finished Gifu 0, Tottori 3. Gifu are on 28 points, which is the same as the 6th place team in the table, Miyazaki, who conceded a late equaliser in a 1-1 home draw with YSCC. Miyazaki made a good start here, hitting the front in the 10th minute with a goal from Kosuke Fujioka, who headed home unmarked from a corner. But YSCC gave a good account of themselves as they tried to get back on level terms. Right at the start of the second period, it was almost 1-1 when Charles Nduka danced his way into the penalty area and fired a shot against the inside of the near post. Midway through the half, YSCC thought they'd equalised when their captain, Kento Dorate, volleyed in a free kick at the far post, but he was ruled offside. It looked like a very marginal decision, but there wasn't a good angle to be seen on the replay, but YSCC felt hard done to there. Now, Miyazaki had had their warnings in this game, but YSCC did restore parity in the 83rd minute, and it was a superb strike from the edge of the penalty area from YSCC sub Shuntaro Kawabe, scoring his first J-League goal. Well worth checking out online if you haven't seen it. Miyazaki tried to win it late on, but their best chance was blazed over the bar by veteran forward Shoma Mizunaga late on. So it finished Miyazaki 1, YSCC 1. Vanrare Hachinohe ended a two-game losing streak by winning 1-0 away at the seemingly perennially hapless Kamatamare Saniki. Saniki had plenty of chances in this game, particularly in the first half, but their final pass or shot was always just, didn't have enough quality. It was wayward, and they wasted all the good possession that they had. And that meant that they eventually fell victim to a classic away team smash-and-grab performance, as Hachinohe soaked up all this pressure and then scored a soft goal to win it with about 10 minutes left. Yosuke Kamigata, usually a scorer of goals, was the provider this time. His cross found two Hachinohe players unmarked at the back post, and I think Shuya Akamatsu was eventually credited with the goal. Tomoyuki Hirose had the initial header, which took a deflection off Akamatsu and wrong-footed the Saniki goalkeeper Takuya Takahashi. So, a disappointing home defeat for Saniki, coupled with their kind of a sponsor logo gaffe with their game shirts. It finished Saniki 0, Hachinohe 1. Another good away performance and result for Hachinohe. I think I might have inadvertently saved the best game until last this week with an absolute thriller that took place at Imabari. The home side beat Fujieda 4-3 with a flurry of second half goals, and Imabari finished this match with just 10 men after a late red card. This game was 1-1 at half time. Fujieda, the visitors, struck first in the 21st minute with Shohei Kawakami's low cross from the right being converted expertly by Takuma Edamura. But Imabari were level right on half time when a corner was headed back across goal by Takuya Sonada. Valdemar just about beat the Fujieda goalkeeper Takuya Sugimoto to the ball and was able to bundle the chance over the line. I think a lot of referees would have given a foul against Valdemar here because Sugimoto had two hands on the ball when Valdemar headed it away from him. But the goal was given and it was 1-1 at the break. In the second half, the visitors went in front again on the hour. Another Kawakami cross ran all the way to the far post, this time where Hayato Nukui was waiting to send the half volley fading away from the Imabari keeper Tomohito Shugyo and into the net. But Fujieda's lead only lasted 4 minutes this time. Imabari won a penalty when Kazuki Okayama went down under a soft but clumsy challenge from Daisuke Inazumi. He was a substitute who'd only been on the field for about 3 minutes, maybe wasn't up to the pace of the game just yet. The penalty was scored emphatically by Shungo Tamashiro, so we're 2-2 at this point. Fujieda nearly went in front again in the 75th minute when a low 25-yard free kick from Jun Suzuki hit the base of the post, and then Shugyo got up and made a great double save to keep out two follow-up efforts from close range. 12 minutes from full time, Imabari went 3-2 ahead. Takuya Shimamura released Tamashiro on the left side of the penalty area, and he fired past Sugimoto for his second goal of the game. And then in the 81st minute, yes, the red card for Imabari. Their right back, Wataru Harada, picked up his second caution of the game and was sent off. Now, from the free kick that resulted in Harada's second yellow card, the ball was cleared and ended up at the feet of the Fujieda goalkeeper, Sugimoto, but he took far too long to decide what he wanted to do with the ball and was then comically robbed by Ryang Hyunju, the young Imabari striker, and he had the simple task of stroking the ball into an empty net for his first J-League goal. So it was 4-2 to Imabari with about 7 minutes to go. But they couldn't relax because less than 60 seconds after that goal from Ryang, at the other end, the big Fujieda defender Maya Sato thumped in a powerful header to make it 4-3. And he was another player scoring his first J-League goal in this game. But yeah, despite a frantic finish, Imabari, the 10 men, held on. And the final score was Imabari 4, Fujieda 3. Their first win in 7 matches, by the way, for Imabari. Definitely worth checking out the highlights of this game. It had just about everything apart from competent defending for the most part. Yeah, fantastic match. Okay, just time before I leave you to preview the weekend fixtures coming up in J3. It's round 19 this weekend, and I think to the relief of Gifu supporters, they are the team that has a bye and will take a break this weekend. They're out of form, aren't they, at the moment? There are 3 games on Saturday this week, the 18th of September, beginning with a kind of autumn kickoff, 1 p.m. YSCC host Imabari on Saturday. The other 2 games are in the evening with leaders Toyama, currently in first place, of course, they're away at 7th place Hachinohe, and the other 7 p.m. game is Tottori hosting Kagoshima. The rest of the round 19 games are all coming up on Sunday, September the 19th. Again, there's a game at 1 p.m. and it involves the second place side in the table, Fukushima. They're away at 11th placed Fujieda. Then at 3 p.m, Numazu hosts Sanuki, and the other 2 games take place in the evening. It's 3rd versus 6th as Iwate host Miyazaki. That game kicks off at 5 p.m, and then the last game on the slate for this weekend is at 6 p.m, and it's 4th place visiting 8th as Kumamoto go to Nagano. So yeah, plenty of interesting games to look out for over the weekend. I think possibly Toyama's trip to Hachinohe might be the most interesting one on Saturday evening. But yeah, I think that's all the week's business seen to. Didn't feel as comprehensive as when Mike does it, so I might have to ask him if I left anything out. But yeah, I think that's all from me. Hopefully you enjoyed the pod this week. And yeah, we'll be back again to do it all again next week and see what happened in the J2 and J3 weekends. But thanks for listening. Enjoy your football, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.